shooting out sparks over 38 states, the Canadian plains, and the tequila fields of Mexico.
A program most deserving of a grand introduction.
The Nocturnal Journal.
The Talk of the Town. WGN Radio 720.
With your guide, Dave Hoekstra.
Daytime turns me off and I don't mean maybe.
Welcome to a special Monday night edition of Nocturnal Journal. We'll be with you for the next 2 hours. In the next hour, we're going to have on the phone Zach Sternwalker. I was telling Cash wrote just a wonderful book called Please Let Me Help, Helpful Letters to the World's Most Wonderful Brands. Very funny. Wrote letters to General Electric, Tom Cruise, Michael Jordan. We also have in the studio in the next hour our friend Claude Walker, who will talk about his online political button museum. And for the first hour, we're going to have some music in the studio, courtesy of Blake Alexander. Thanks for joining us, Blake.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to see you. You've got a gig coming up at the Merchandise Mart on December 30th. It's the Eve of the Eve. Remember that.
Yep.
8 o'clock on December 30th. And it's is it a benefit for like HighSight Scholarship?
Yeah, it's a benefit for HighSight, and they provide scholarships, tutoring, mentoring, leadership development, college readiness programs that create possibilities for Chicago high school students from low-income families.
And you will be singing R&B Adult Contemporary. You'll be singing some of that a little bit here on the show.
Yes.
And define that.
R&B, adult contemporary, I mean, it's a huge mix. I even do, when I perform covers, I do a lot of old school, so everything from Frankie Valli to Sinatra, the modernized versions of that, which would be Michael Bublé, so I do, you know, covers and my own original stuff, which they'll definitely be hearing tonight.
And you're young, and I didn't ask you, you're a young guy.
I am.
How old are you?
25, feel like I'm going on 50.
How did you get into this?
I spent a lot of time with my grandparents when I was younger, and they would constantly just play the old school stuff when I was in the car, you know, around the house, Sunday morning cleaning, when I'd be still sleeping at 11:30 in the morning and waking up to can't take my eyes off of you. So
that's good.
I fell in love with the genre of music, and yeah, just kind of went from there.
Born and raised in the Chicago area?
South suburbs, Chicago South Heights, suburbs. Yeah.
And what did your parents do? There was music around the house.
There was. My dad was actually a DJ.
Yes,
back in the 80s, he was a DJ. He even DJed at Excalibur downtown. So that's, I think, where the music inclination came from in the family. As far as singers and professional entertainers, though, there was really no source of entertainment genetically in my family, I guess you could say, other than my father being a DJ. So I know my grandmother and her family, way back in the day, they would play instruments. Now, myself, my vocal cords are my instruments, so that's the best type of piano that I can play.
So you always wanted to follow the singer, right? You also write songs, but as far as rock and roll and stuff like that, this is the path you wanted to follow?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy and appreciate every single genre of music, and there's really not one genre that I really dislike, but I would say my favorite is, you know, the stuff that I just explained. So as far as those genres go, now, I have no problem singing Journey or the Eagles or, you know, any of the greats like that, but, yep.
Tom Dreesen.
Yes.
We were talking about Tom Dreesen before we went on the air. Here's Tom Dreesen. I've been in Hollywood for over 48 years now, and I know talent when I see it, and Blake Alexander has it all. Boy's incredible stage performance and vocals that can wow you. He's going to be the next rising star.
Yes, Tom.
When did he say that, and when did he see you?
This was 2 years ago. I performed for his annual golf outing that he has, and you know, he's just a great person all around. He performed with all of the greats, obviously, as we know, Sinatra.
Yeah.
You know, he opened for him for 14 years, and I had the pleasure of meeting him at the Union League Club a couple of years back and just kind of told him what I did. I had the grind and the aspiration to have the courage to go up to him right after he was done emceeing the whole event and asked if he would just chat with me for 5 minutes afterwards. And from then on, I gave him a card. He looked up the website and wanted me to perform for his event and open up for him. So,
Wow. Did he must have given you some Sinatra stories.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We've had lunch a couple of times, and, you know, we spent at least over 2.5 hours just talking. Not just about that, but, you know, about life in general, and, you know, to try and get away from the entertainment aspect of things and just, you know, talk about, you know, families and what we like to do for fun, per se.
I mean, Sinatra and maybe Tony Bennett, they had a certain style. A certain mm-hmm. air about them. I mean, now this is radio, but you're all dressed up. I mean, you must have. You didn't get dressed up just for us. You've got a nice suit and tie on, and is that part of your thing? I mean,
it's part of the look that I have. When I was, I want to say 8 or 9 years old, I asked for my first tuxedo for Christmas. And that was because my father introduced me to James Bond movies when I was, you know, that age. And, you know, I fell in love with it. And I always thought that the poise and the confidence that James Bond had when he was dressed up and, you know, just spick and span in a tuxedo, it just looked amazing on the screen. And that's how I wanted to present myself, you know, in front of my audiences. And I always wanted to be an entertainer as far back as I can remember. I wanted to be a movie actor. I wanted to be a professional magician.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah. So I wanted to be a voiceover actor, all sorts of things. And this is just the kind of path that it's led me on.
When you're dressed nicely, how does that affect you internally and artistically?
It makes me feel like I can just be me. Yeah. Like I said, when I asked for the tuxedo, I would wear the thing when I did get it for Christmas. I'd wear it to the grocery store. I would wear it to school. You know, so it just makes me feel like a better person. When you look good, you know, you feel good throughout the day, and you feel like you can present yourself, you know, better to no matter who you meet. You never know when you walk out of the house in the morning who you're going to meet. You can meet the, you know, the President of the United States. You can meet the President of England. You can meet, you know, some of the biggest stars. When you walk out, you just never know. So that's the way that I looked at it when I was younger.
You got to be ready. The Merchandise Mart, December 30th. Do you know anything about ticket information or how people can find out or your website? Or
So they can just Google Eve of Eve in Chicago, and the link will come right up, so they can purchase tickets on there. And then I will be performing from 8:30 until 10:30 at night. So,
and what will your repertoire be? And will you?
It's going to be a mix of you know, covers, my original stuff, so everything from Bruno Mars to Robin Thicke to Bublé to Maroon 5, all sorts of stuff.
How do you pick material?
Just kind of depending on the audience. I have a wide repertoire that I do, and I just feel the audience as I start to perform, and that's pretty much it.
You might be the only guest we've had thus far that has rubbed shoulders with Tom Dreesen and DJ White Shadow.
Yes.
Talk about that. Talk about DJ White Shadow.
DJ White Shadow was amazing. He's a great person, lots of energy. So we clicked immediately. And this was at the Green Tie Ball event 2 years ago. And, you know, he just said, okay, give me the 4 songs that you're going to do for this event. You know, I'm going to play them. I'm going to mix them up a little bit, and we're going to have some fun. I said, okay. So as soon as I got on that stage, I mean, he just started playing with the song, speeding them up a little bit, throwing in his own mix. And as I was performing, then I see him in the back jumping up and down, fist pumping. And, you know, it just made my day. He took his shirt off and everything.
So, wow.
Yeah,
wow,
it was it was a great time.
Okay, we're going to take a break for some spots, and you're going to come back with a song.
Yes.
Okay, so don't go away on Nocturnal Journal with Blake Alexander.
We've never done before. Oh, a girl, the way you make me feel is just like electricity. Ooh, the way you move your body. Every time I look at you, I'll jump up and touch the moon. Cause that's the high I got for you. Yeah, that's the high I got for you. You. They can say that we're crazy, but I'd still call you my baby. Ooh, wanna be with her, wanna be with her today. Ooh, wanna do all the things we've never done before. We can open up and pour our past away, like an empty bottle of champagne, or even start a new anniversary. For us being friends, friends till the end, letting it flow to move while things go, allowing the gods to help us when we're slow. One day you'll be my lady. Open up and pour past away, like an empty bottle of champagne. Ooh, wanna be with her, wanna be with her today. Ooh, wanna do all the things we've never done before. Ooh, wanna be with her, wanna be with her. Ooh, wanna do everything in every single perfect way.
There you go. That's Blake Alexander, and that's Wanna Be With Her. Oh, I got that reverb. Got me going on that reverb. How's that sound?
I'm gonna turn it. Sounds very velvety.
Cash, that's the first time I've ever done reverb on the show. Turn it down there. So tell me about that song.
So this song was actually thought of, I want to say, about two and a half years ago. I hummed it into my phone, and I ended up meeting, maybe 6 months later, a brilliant, brilliant composer. His name's Adrian Ruiz. And
now, where's Adrian from?
Adrian is, well, I don't get me wrong on this, but I do want to say he is from Chicago.
Okay.
But him and I just kind of connected one day, and I found out maybe a month after we connected that he was a composer, pianist, and I said, well, you know, I'd love if you help me out with the song. I have an idea for it, and him and I just kind of collaborated and went together on this, and yeah, so, you know, there were two other writers along with myself as far as the lyrics go, Ben One and a good friend of mine, Steve Forth, and we just all kind of collaborated and threw it together, but it literally started with me humming bum 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 ba dum bum bum ba da bum, and that was it.
And when did that come out?
It hasn't come out.
Oh, it's a preview.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You are the first here tonight. We're planning on releasing the music video right before Valentine's Day.
Oh, okay. So. It'd be a good Valentine's Day song.
Yeah.
I like the empty bottle of champagne stuff.
Of course, that's
very, very nice. We've been talking on the show lately, the last couple of musical guests we've had, about distribution avenues. So how do you get product out, and also use that opportunity to tell the listeners how people can find the website and all that stuff. But how do you get product out today?
So as of now, I'm waiting until I come out with a full EP album, which is about five or six songs. So I already have three, so I'm releasing them as singles, and then we'll be coming out with the full album eventually. So as far as iTunes, you can't get it on there. You can't get it on Spotify. So I'm using Facebook a lot to promote.
You do use Facebook?
Oh, yes. I'm using Facebook to promote all of this stuff as well as my website.
Okay. And what's your give the website?
Yeah, it's www.blakealexanderentertainment.com. So okay. www.blakealexanderentertainment.com.
And what about, I'm curious, I don't know all that much about you. I'm curious about your path again, with distribution, about performing live and stuff. How important is that to you? I mean, you perform at the Emmys. I mean, do you do clubs around here? Talk about getting your music out in a live setting, besides a merchandise mart on December 30th.
Yes, I perform at a lot of private events. I started in restaurants. I actually used to be a professional magician from 11 until 16.
I'm going to ask you about that maybe after the news, yeah.
So, and that's how the entire singing career started. Was through the magic, and it all started at McDonald's in Limpy Fields, Illinois.
Really?
Yes. It's a rock and roll McDonald's. They have a stage, they have lighting, they have sound. I mean, it is a crazy atmosphere, but
I've never been there.
One. Yeah.
Really?
Yes. So that's how it all started. Randy Kahn, wonderful owner operator, and then it just kind of took off from there. The word spread, and I perform frequently at many restaurants around Northwest Indiana as well as around the suburbs of Illinois.
Are they like supper clubs, or what's the setting?
So Italian, you know, fine dining, steakhouses, stuff like that.
Yeah. And when you're at the Merchandise Mart, and do you have any other gigs coming up after the Merchandise Mart?
I do. You're catching me off guard right now.
Well, my question would be like ensemble. What's your band like?
So a lot of the times it's just me with professional backing tracks that a band has actually recorded, and then I just put on the show myself.
Okay.
where I dance and, you know, just entertain people. That's what it is pretty much entitled as of now. But, you know, in the future, I'm definitely looking on doing a tour, you know, coming up within the next 3 years. That's the next vision to have. So it's just about getting the right people together that are committed, you know, as much as I am, to be able to do something like that.
What was the situation with the Emmys?
The Emmys, this is my second year doing the Midwest Emmys, and my wonderful manager, Joanne Ficori.
Oh, I know her.
Yes. Yeah. She was able to get me involved with that, and I performed for the entire cocktail hour. So it was about an hour and a half, and you know, everybody who's anybody in media was there. So it was a wonderful time for myself to get the exposure out, the music, and everything. So.
Oh, good, good. Okay, we're gonna take a break for the news. We come back, and you do a Christmas song for us.
Wonderful. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So don't go away. We'll have more Blake Alexander music after this on WGN.
I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue just thinking about you. Decorations of red on a green Christmas tree. It won't be the same, dear, if you're not here with me. And when those blue snowflakes are falling, that's when those blue memories start calling. You'll be doing all right with your Christmas of white. But I'll have a blue, 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 blue Christmas. And come on! snowflakes start falling, that's when those blue memories start calling. You'll be doing all right with your Christmas overwhite. And I'll have a blue Christmas. Oh, yes, I'll have a blue, whoa, Christmas.
Blake Alexander, excellent.
Thank you,
I love
friend.
It. It's Thank like a you. Stripper version of that song. It's
yeah, really it, that's actually a Michael Bublé cover version of it.
Really?
Yeah, so it's like a...
I didn't know that, really.
Yes.
Really, it's like I feel like I was on Bourbon Street
exactly,
or something on
yep.
Christmas Eve.
Yep. Down to the bayou.
Yeah. So now will you be... Well, Christmas will be over when you're at the... Is that part of your pre-Christmas repertoire?
Yes. Yeah, so after Christmas, I pretty much just...
Put it away.
Yeah, out of the repertoire.
Yeah. Wow.
I think when certain stations start playing it 2 months ahead of time, people are just sick of it by Christmas time, so...
Do you do Baby It's Cold Outside?
That is a whole other story. I'm not even going to go there, but I love that song.
It's ridiculous.
Yes.
Oh, you want me to turn that reverb down? I love that. I'm addicted to that reverb now. So, you know, we were talking during the break, and you gave a good answer, so I want to tell the listeners what we were talking about. Is last night I went out to the Arcata Theater to see Ronnie Spector. And her hits were from, you know, 64, 65 with the Ronettes, the Phil Spector stuff, which I just love. You know, it's so well produced and just the band. I mean, last night the band, they had those charts down. They must have just learned them right off those records. They were perfect.
You said with the Ronettes, correct?
Yeah, well, she has new Ronettes now. They're much younger than Ronnie's 75. But I was thinking, you know, and I was it's true with the Beatles and the thing about my generation, maybe not really having a handle on Glenn Miller and Bing Crosby and stuff like that. So some of the classic artists you cover, whether it be, you know, Sinatra, how do you bring that to your peer? You said you're 25. How do you bring that to your peer group? What do you do?
I can say what really put me on board with truly appreciating it and getting my friend or noticing, I'm sorry, that my friends could actually appreciate it with me was I may have been in sixth or seventh grade, and I played a Frankie Valli live performance of him. I believe it was in the 80s. For my friends while they were at my house. And now, mind you, we're in 6th, 7th grade, and they loved it just as much as I did. And I kind of got them into it. And I think pretty much just what we have to do, everything goes in its spurts. You know, every so many years, things always end up coming back. I just saw at Home Depot the other day, they were having the 50s fridges coming back now.
Right.
The style of the fridges. So everything goes throughout its periods.
We did a thing Saturday night on mid-century. The whole mid-century thing's coming back. You know, mid-century house. And
same thing with, fashion, and this exact same thing happens with music. So my goal is to just continue to bring back the good lyrics, the good music with you know, the strings, the melodies, everything that they had back in that day, just with a more modern twist to it. And you know, that's just like kind of what Bublé has done with his own twist. And that's the goal from here.
What was that swing thing you were talking about? What was it called? You were talking about during the break?
Yeah, so Booty Swing Radio. If you look that up on Pandora, it's an actual radio station. It's called Booty Swing, and it's a modern-day swing-type music. It's 20s mixes made with modern-day beats, and it is phenomenal. I mean, you can walk into any bar, and it just gets the party going.
This is the first time I've heard your stuff, and the first time I've heard you. You seem, I'm just guessing, best on based on two songs and our conversation. You seem to have an affinity for horn and horn charts. Again, we were talking during the break. I love soul music. I love Chicago soul music was known for those like classic horn charts back then in the 60s. There was all this great commercial work in Chicago, and these commercial guys would, you know, do the commercial work in the day and then play on these great soul tunes, you know, Major Lance and Curtis Mayfield at night. Do you like horns? And horns also happen in Chicago rock and roll. I mean, bands like Chicago.
I was just going to say, Chicago. I mean, Saturday in the Park. Yeah. You know, songs like that.
Yeah. Talk about horns.
Can't Take My Eyes Off You, in my opinion, has the best horn solo of any song that I've at least heard out of the hundreds and thousands of songs that I've listened to. I just think they tie in music together. When you have that, horns bring such a full sound to music that when you combine each one together, it just makes the entire track sound completely different, and it really wakens people up. I love the sound when they're blended.
I'm guessing that when you select material, do you have a special ear for horns?
I do.
Yeah.
Yes. The first song that I did, Want to Be With Her, my original, I specifically, you know, sat down with my composer. I said, we have to have a horn solo, horn section, something in there. And then once again, as the song went along, I just hummed the horn section out. And we kind of tweaked it a little bit after I hummed it out. But that's pretty much how I wanted it to sound. So,
what are your aspirations? I mean, I can see you playing this is a no-brainer, places like Vegas or Atlantic City. What are your aspirations? Where would you want to take this?
My mind goes in a million directions every day with the singing career. I mean, I want to be a professional singer, on the big charts, obviously. Mm-hmm. And that's everybody's goal, I think, you know, that wants to be a singer. They want to be up there on the charts, write a hit song, something like that. I would love to be a movie actor, a voice over actor. Pretty much anything that has to do with involving people. I love working with people, love making people happy, smile, and, you know, just kind of forget about life's problems for a couple of hours while they watch me entertain.
We can say we had you win down the road. You'll come back and
God
see
willing.
Us when you're famous,
God
right?
Willing,
yeah.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to take a break. We'll come back with one more song.
Yes.
Okay. So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal with Blake Alexander.
This isn't just another nightmare that I'm living through, wondering, hoping if I was meant for you. Give or take one or two, maybe 3 days, and I'll admit I was waiting for you. The days seem to pass by slower since you've been gone. And I hope I can move on and not wonder who's holding you tonight. I would lie and tell you that I don't miss your eyes. And every day I wonder if you see me through a different light. The best for you, every dream, I hope you see it through. Don't let yourself go. And I think we both agree, a little love, it never hurts to try. And I hope you try again. Forgive me and the mistakes I've made. Maybe then I can walk away and we can both learn to love again. Tell me at the least that you love me, so I know that my love, it wasn't in vain. Hear the words you used to say to me, that the future was brighter between you and I. And all the days seem to pass by fast since you've been gone. I hope I can move on. you see me through different eyes. And I hope the best for you. Every dream, I hope you see it through. Don't let yourself go. And I think we both agree, a little love, it never hurts to try. And I hope you try again. Forgive me the mistakes I've made, but maybe then I can walk away and we can both learn to love again.
Impeccable, impeccable performance there. That's Blake Alexander, Love Again. I can see some listeners just laying in bed, cuddling up to each other at 11:54 to that song.
Of course, of course.
And here we are. So talk about that tune.
So that tune was actually written by Roland Lim III, and a very, very close friend of mine, another producer and composer for me. And he wrote that song and sat on it for years and said, I can never find a voice to this song. He played it for me and said, Blake, I think this is, you know, this song was made for you. So I listened to it and I told him, every single person, if they've ever been in a relationship or a breakup, you know, or gone through heartbreak in general, can relate to this song. And I know I have. I know everyone that I've played it for and that has listened to it has said the exact same thing. So I just thought it was beautiful. And it was the feature song in the movie Dreams I Never Had, which was directed by Iyad Hajjaj. And it has won so far now 9 awards, including Best Feature Drama at the Burbank Film Festival. So that was a huge accomplishment that this song had. And it was my first single that I came out with.
And who's in that film? Robin Givens?
Robin Givens, Malcolm McDowell, yes.
And when did that film come out?
About last year.
Okay.
Year and a couple months. So it's still at the film festivals now. And like I said, 9 awards is amazing.
Wow. So you're recording? What do you got coming up? I mean, outside of the performance, I mean, are you recording new stuff?
Yes. Yes. We have 2 more upbeat originals that we're working on. And those should hopefully be done by spring.
Yeah.
So, yes, Want to Be With Her. Like I said, this is the first time it's been broadcast like this. That music video will be released right before Valentine's Day, and then the other two will be following.
When Tom Dreesen gave you that heads up thing, did he give you any advice, or have you had any advice from anybody else in the business, like just what to do and how to navigate your path?
I have had a lot of advice from a lot of people. Some people completely fake and, you know, pretending to be who they're really not. And Tom Dreesen was definitely not one of those people. He gave me almost fatherly advice.
Yeah.
You know,
right.
Something that I would literally look up to my own father and my grandfather as. And, you know, when we had lunch twice, at least two and a half hours, it's more or less personal with what we talked about, but it was more than I needed to hear to know exactly how to make this happen and work. And I can't thank him enough for doing that and taking the time out of his schedule with who he is in the stature that he has, you know, as an entertainer and being around and perform for, you know, the greatest entertainers on earth.
All those years with Frank. So December 30th at the Merchandise Mart. You start at 8:30?
About 8:30.
8:30.
Yeah.
It's the eve of the eve. It's a benefit performance.
It is, yes.
Highsight Scholarship? How do you?
Yes, Highsight Scholarship. Yep. So Merchandise Mart, eve of eve, 8:30 until about 10:30. And Highsight provides scholarships, tutoring, mentoring, leadership development, college readiness programs that create new possibilities for Chicago high school students from low-income families.
Well, good for you. Give us your website, and then we'll let you go.
Yes, we're at www.blakealexanderentertainment.com.
Very good. Good radio voice there. So thanks for coming down tonight.
Thank you so much.
Good luck to you.
Thanks for having me.
Brass buttons, green suits, and silver shoes. My mind was young until she grew. secret thoughts known only by few. It was a dream.
It's midnight with some Graham Parsons on the radio. So we're going to talk about buttons. Bicentennial by Button, 200 Years of Trailblazers, Rascals, and Felons is a free online exhibit featuring images of more than 1,600 Illinois campaign buttons. And it's curated by our friend in the studio, Claude Walker. Claude, thanks for joining us.
Dave, great to be here. Thanks for having me. Usually when we bump into each other, it's at a ball game or at some dive bar. This is a totally different setting. I've never been up to the new WGN studios here, but they are very posh. There's no graffiti in the Johns. You know, all the staff, you know, they're all wearing tuxedos. You know, the champagne fountain is very
impressive. Well, we had that music. So, yeah, it's a special night here on a Monday here at WGN. Now, your background, I know you both... You know, like you said, I know you through sports. I saw you down in Puerto Rico back in 2003. It was an Expos Cubs series, wasn't it?
That was a great baseball road trip.
Yeah.
In those days, the Expos, before they moved to Washington, D.C., they would play several home series in San Juan, Puerto Rico. So in 2003, the Cubs had a series down there, and you know, you and I and our buddy Rich Harris and half of Cub Nation went down to San Juan for these games, and you know, it was spectacular. The stadium is, you know, very intimate. It's more like a minor league stadium.
Yeah, sure.
Hiram Bithorn, which, as you know, is named after a Chicago pitcher who was the first Puerto Rican player in the bigs. So the stadium's very intimate. You know, we were one night we were in the right field bleachers. And the wall is like 6 feet high. And the two right fielders were Vladimir Guerrero and Sammy Sosa.
Yeah.
And, you know, two of the best in the business at the time. And, you know, Sammy had just come off the cork bat incident.
Yeah, right.
So people in the bleachers were, you know, kind of giving him the business there. And so it was a very memorable baseball road trip.
It was a great road trip. The highlight was seeing Rich Harris in a swimming suit in the pool.
I think the highlight might have been seeing a certain Cubs reliever in a casino at 3 a.m. Throwing some dice really fast.
Yeah, right. So, Cash, check out this resume of our guest, and this is going to lead into the political button thing. Senior advisor to a governor, a U.S. senator, a Chicago alderman, and the first Asian American elected judge. You've done all that and more, I know.
Not all at the same time.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Senior advisor to governor. Was that Governor Quinn?
Yes, it was.
Talk a little bit about that.
I'd been involved with a lot of Pat Quinn's endeavors over the years, going back to the mid-70s, in a couple of his term limits, petition drives, and most of his early campaigns. And so I joined him in the governor's office for a few years at the very end there, and as his senior writer, which was quite an experience. Every day was different, and they were all crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And I knew the Quinn thing, Chicago alderman. Which alderman was that?
That'd be Alderman Joe Moore.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, yeah. And what'd you do with him?
We go to a lot of Cubs games, actually, and that's where most of the best advice comes from.
Yeah, yeah. So... I know you got the collector bug. Talk about when you started collecting buttons. I mean, 1960? Talk about your family. There's a political background in your family and how you first got exposed to buttons.
My father were both newspapermen as well as politicians. My grandfather had various newspapers in the western suburbs, the Forest Park Review and Des Plaines Valley Times and Westchester News. And
there was a Westchester News?
Yeah. So that was in the 50s and 60s. And he was in the legislature in the 1950s and early.
What was his name?
Claude Walker Sr.,
okay.
For whom I am named. And then my dad was also into politics. Now, they were both Republicans. And I fortunately saw the light at a pretty early age and made the transition. But I think it came naturally to me to go into politics and to be a writer, to combine those two joys of life.
Now, your grandfather gave you your first button? Was that a Nixon Lodge button?
Nixon Lodge, right. Still have it.
You do?
You know, a couple of years later, then I bought my first button.
Your first button?
AUH2O. Which I know you're a chemistry buff.
Yeah, really.
That stands for gold water.
Oh, that's good.
Table. So that was my first button, and Gathered about 4,000 since then.
4,000 buttons.
Every time I do a campaign, I make sure to swipe a few buttons. You know, you don't see buttons in campaigns as much as you used to. You know, I think in the old days, it was the best way for people to have an expression of who they supported or what cause they supported. And I think campaigns are starting to get away from that a little bit, which as a button collector, you know, I have mixed feelings about that. You know, and when I was coming down here, I stopped off at Bug House Square. Uh-huh. And, you know, as you know, that was a place where people could have a public dialogue and, you know, stand on a soapbox, you know, until somebody knocked you off with their words, you know, and you had to affirmatively express your desires, your opinions. The same with a button. You know, you may remember the 1983 mayoral campaign, and the Harold Washington blue rainbow button was an incredible, powerful tool for political change, and people would wear that button and just, you know, see somebody else wearing that button and just have a little smile like, yeah, we're on the same team. And, you know, I think now maybe people are, you know, they're using social media a lot more in campaigns, and, you know, you just don't see during the campaign season people wearing buttons.
You got me thinking. I've saved some buttons over the years, but I do have a Honkies for Harold button.
There you go.
I think that might have been bootleg, but do you have one of those?
Maybe I do, actually.
You,
yeah,
do have a Honkies for Harold.
For Harold, yeah.
You've designed more than 25 buttons.
I have.
Now talk about that. Talk about what ones you've designed and what goes in. Obviously brevity, but I mean, what goes into designing a good button? Which ones have you done? Which ones are you proudest of?
I brought two along tonight that are related to the bicentennial. One is called Illinois Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
And in that button, we have the image of Mount Rushmore. And on the top, you have the four Illinoisans who went to the White House. And then sort of a mirror image on the bottom, you have the four governors who went to the Big House.
Yeah.
And
recite those again. I mean, it's Blago. Yeah.
Otto Kerner, Dan Walker.
No relation, Dan Walker.
Thank you. Okay. And George Ryan and Rod Blagojevich.
Matt Blagojevich.
So I think, you know, that button sort of shows graphically sort of the yin-yang of Illinois politics, that how did a state like us produce, you know, eight totally different people, you know, with eight different paths to power, and, you know, four of whom, you know, went to the slammer. So, you know, maybe there's something about the state of Illinois that that they're like two sides of the same coin, that there's, you know, it's a complex state, it's a tough arena for people to survive in. So maybe, you know, what sent people to the White House also sent people to the Big House.
Now, you designed these buttons, and they are physical buttons. Can people get them, or are they just limited edition?
These were limited edition, but we have a few left over here. And you know, the other one I did, I call Illinois Button, because it's the map of Illinois made out of 75 buttons. It sort of tells the story of Illinois through stories, because each of these buttons represents someone's dreams or schemes or aspirations. And you know, so I think the story of Illinois is best told through these little wearable works of art.
Now your museum lives at www.illinoisbicentennial.org.
correct.
It's fascinating. You've got, talk about the different galleries. There's, what, 30, 31 different galleries, and you've kind of split them up. So
yeah, well, we've got one whole
section.
When
listeners go to www.illinoisbicentennial.org, what will they see, and how should they navigate it?
There are 31 different galleries. Some focus on politicians that were busted.
Yeah.
Local politicians, governors, you know, Congress critters.
That's probably a big part of the
That's a big
yeah,
part.
Yeah.
I have a section called Sidebar, and these are galleries that look at an interesting little part of Illinois history, such as when Adlai Stevenson was paired up with the LaRouches to run for governor, or, for example, the Council Wars or the Daley Dynasty. So, you know, you can focus in on certain little sections of Illinois history by doing that. I think the The best part of it are the trailblazers.
You have women. You have women trailblazers.
We have all sorts of trailblazers, and you know, some have really interesting stories. You know, like Ron Sable, the first openly gay person to run for city council.
Oh, I remember
Chacha Jimenez, who was the first Latinx to run for city council. You know, as well as people like Judy Bartopinka or Sandra Otaka, the first Asian-American elected judge in Cook County. So I think you can learn a lot about who the barrier breakers were in Illinois history by looking at some of those galleries in the exhibit.
They've been on the show. You've collaborated with our friends at Busy Beaver, right?
They're fantastic.
Yeah. How was that marriage made?
Well, they actually produced these buttons that I brought tonight, and I've used them in the production of other buttons. It's such a unique place out there on West Armitage.
Sure.
It's both a button factory, you know, and I've been collecting all my life, but I never really knew how they were made until I saw it, you know, at the Busy Beaver. And then they have a great museum, not-for-profit. It's in the same building.
Mm-hmm.
Their online museum is fantastic, and I have about 100 images that came courtesy of Busy Beaver. So, you know, I'd encourage anybody who's out there in you know, the near northwest side to stop by Busy Beaver sometime. It's a fascinating place.
Right down the road from Ouija's, which is a great little bar. Ouija's is a great bar, great photographer. Why do you do this? What's the muse?
Well, you know, a bicentennial is a pretty big deal. 200 years is a pretty long time. A lot of institutions don't make it as long as 200 years. So I wanted to, as sort of an armchair historian and as a button collector and as a writer, kind of combine all those to tell the story of Illinois in a very different way. So we have the 1,600 images. We have a lot of my essays. You know, having, you know, spent a lifetime in Illinois politics, I've got a lot of stories, and, you know, Dave, I'm starting to forget them.
Yeah.
So I thought I better start writing these things down. So that's sort of how that was the genesis of the Bicentennial by Button exhibit.
Okay, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and talk a little bit more about buttons. I want to talk about your writing, too. So don't go away with Claude Walker on WGN's Nocturnal Journal. Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. And in the studio, we have our friend Claude Walker. Veteran of, this is stuff you gave me, Claude, veteran of 80 Illinois campaigns and collector of more than 4,000 political items.
Right on.
I mean, so you're really an expert in the field.
I don't know about that.
Yeah, and your museum is at www.illinoisbicentennial.org. Have you talked to any politicians who collect buttons, who are interested in what you're doing? What do they say?
You know, I'm just now starting to get feedback from a lot of people about the site, and I'm getting collectors from around the state who are sending me some really interesting things. So recently I got a picture of a cigarette lighter that was given out by Paul Powell as a campaign thing.
Yeah.
And
talk about, for listeners who may not know who Paul Powell is.
Well, Paul Powell, the gray fox of Vienna, very powerful member of the House and then Secretary of State. And, you know, he was sort of an innovator in that, you know, he had the first, you know, we have reflective license plates because of Paul Powell, for example. But, you know, he was a little hinky in that he would ask, well, he wouldn't ask his employees. He would hand out a bag here. I brought a copy of a Paul Powell bag here. This is courtesy of the Alderman Joe Moore.
I've never seen that. Put it in the bag.
It says, put it in the bag. Elect Paul Powell Secretary of State. And they would pass this around, and the employees would put it in the bag. So you know, he was best known for encouraging drivers who were applying for their license plates to just make the check out to him personally, because it would really speed up the process. And so when he died, they found in his hotel room at the St. Nick Hotel in Springfield, behind 25 cans of cream corn, they found $3 million and $5 million in cash, $3 million in stock, all behind the cream corn. So, you know, he was best known for the phrase, I can smell the meat a-cookin'. So when you go to IllinoisBicentennial.org, you can see a cigarette lighter that we think was the one that he used to light the stove to cook the meat.
Isn't that something? Now, you've written books.
I have.
But this museum and these buttons, that begs for a book. I mean, you should take it, besides online, I can see like a photo book or something. I mean, have you thought about bringing this to print?
Well,
with all these stories, like the one you just told?
20,000 words. That's, yeah. That's a half of a novel right there. Uh-huh. So it was a tough writing project. I'd probably have to go back and do a little bit of editing here and there to clean it up. But
there's oddities. Talk about some other oddities.
So, we've got some other interesting things in the museum. One of my favorites is a pronunciation sponge. It's a sponge that says Blagojevich.
I never saw that.
If you dip it in water, it becomes freaking golden. We have a Chicago street guide from Mayor Mike Belandic. Which I always found ironic because he lost office because he couldn't clean the streets. So, but it was nice of him to do that. We have a George Ryan bookmark here with a creepy clown on it.
Oh, that's terrible.
And it says, careful kids are street smart, courtesy of George Ryan, who didn't know that careful kids don't shake down businesses they regulate. Finally, another one I brought is kind of interesting. It's a J.B. Pritzker campaign brochure. Now, you may wonder, why is that interesting? Well, it's because it's from 1998 when he ran for Congress. And I have to say, the guy looks great compared. I mean, he looks the same now that he did in 1998. He hasn't aged a bit. Yeah, so we'll see in 4 years. We'll check back on that.
That's amazing.
You can see a lot of oddities in the Bicentennial Museum.
So your website also, the button website also links to your other projects. Real briefly, we're running out of time here, but talk about some of your books. And I was really interested in the Earth. You know, we're both such baseball fans. The Earth Baseball Tourney.
You know, in 1964, I got a baseball card for Masanori Murakami.
Right.
He was a rookie prospect with the Giants. And up until that point, I had no idea that baseball existed outside of USA. So that began sort of a lifelong interest in extending the reach of baseball. And so the Earth Baseball Tourney is a novel about someone who tries to push baseball into places where they don't know anything about baseball. And it's sort of a dark comedy about the globalization of baseball as well as killer cell phones.
And that's out now? And when did it come out?
And then the other one, Drone Dogs, came out a little more recently. And that takes place in Chicago in the near future when everybody's got a drone. Everybody's got a personal drone. People don't take selfies anymore, Dave. I know you like selfies, but they all take dronies. So pretty soon, bad people get drones in their hands. Burglars, drone peepers, gangbangers. So mayhem ensues.
You may be the first guest we've ever had that doesn't have a cell phone. How's that work out for you? What are the good things about not
very
having a cell phone? And
I have total focus.
Really?
It's fantastic. Yeah. Really? And I know the thought of putting a device with a little radioactive chip right next to my brain is not appealing. So we're going to hold off as long as we can.
Because technology is kind of a thread in some of these books.
Absolutely.
You're kind of fascinated with
I think
that.
It's technology in the hands of idiots is the basic theme to those two books in particular.
Well, it certainly can be true with politicians and Twitter. You know, it can be
exactly.
True. That's another reason buttons are going away, Twitter. Twitter's like a button, you know.
I know, but the thing is, Twitter doesn't last real long. I mean,
true.
It's out there for a long time, but, you know, with a button, the campaign, the cause may end, but the button continues.
Claude, will you come back and see us sometime?
I'd love to.
You got so much stuff. I love that Paul Powell stuff.
Thanks a lot, Dave.
So you can see Bicentennial by Button, 200 Years of Trailblazers, Rascals, and Felons at www.IllinoisBicentennial.org. So thanks so much, Claude.
All right, thanks,
and
Dave. Great
back
to be
with
here.
More after this on WGN.
Do you remember when we sang John Denver 2 years ago at your sister's funeral? We got you into.
Well, welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. And that's a song called California's Burning Up from a band that our guest is on, a member of. Zach, are you there?
I'm here.
Zach Sternwalker, thanks for staying up late for us there in Philadelphia. That's your band, Potential Gospel. You're on to talk about your book, but I really love some of this music. So before we get into the book, talk about the band.
Yeah, it's just a group, a couple of real close friends of mine. We've been playing together for a couple of years, doing mostly folk stuff. And that was a song I wrote about my pops when he passed away.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, how can people find, you know, you heard a little bit of the song, but how can people find out more about this, your music and stuff?
Pretty much just Potential Gospel Bandcamp, and then we also have an Instagram, so you can follow us there or check out our new stuff. We got an EP coming out in about a month on Bandcamp.
Do you play out much? I mean, over in the Philadelphia area?
We do a bit. Usually about once a month, so around town and stuff.
You know, I mean, a little bit. I heard minimalist, subtle, and that's kind of what I like about this book. So the book is called "Please Let Me Help: Helpful Letters to the World's Most Wonderful Brands." So what you? I want you to tell a story in your own words. But you pick subjects, some corporate like Levi Strauss and Coca-Cola, and other celebrities. Mm-hmm. Like Paul McCartney, I'm looking at the Paul McCartney one right now, or Tom Cruise, and you give them kind of unsolicited advice. So pick up the story from there. How'd you get this idea?
Yeah, I wrote it a bit of time ago, so I was trying to remember the other day how I actually came about the idea. But I think that the two things that set it off were I found a book on how to write like an engaging letter requesting a job, like a, you know, self-help book in a thrift store. And I just thought the voice of this sort of form letter was pretty funny. And then I was also working for a guy who had spinal atrophy, and he was having me sort of write solicitations, emails to people, seeing if he could get tickets to their movies or backstage passes to their concerts, because of what was going on with him health-wise. So I think I was doing that at the time, and I imagine I probably wrote one or two and then liked it and just continued on. But generally, the way I did it is I went with the idea first, so I'd have an idea for what I thought was sort of a dumb product that didn't need to exist, or I was thinking about a certain actor or something and had a funny angle, and then wrote the company and or the person and went from there.
It's published by Microcosm Publishing, our friends in Portland, Oregon. They just do great stuff. I mean, the whole idea of publishing these books, they're small. You can carry them around. They're just in the design and the artwork is just fantastic. But I want to read a little bit of that because what I like about this is Your style and these little letters you write, it's so subtle. I mean, I don't like reading stuff too much on the air, but I'm going to read Dear Paul McCartney. Let me begin by saying how much I love your old band, the Beatles. I do not believe the songs are racist propaganda aimed at the Chinese, as many of the music, air quotes, critics have argued over the years. In fact, I've collected both albums and spent many nights selecting my favorite tracks and playing them for my less musically educated friends, which brings me to the point of this letter. So what did you tell Paul McCartney's camp, picking up from there?
My idea was that I would create this, you know, best of the Beatles sort of mixtape, and that I was the expert, but at the same time I was confusing them with the Eagles in the letter, which was sort of the joke.
Yeah.
And I guess sort of the impetus behind that letter was actually sort of a serious thing that always like irritates me is when, you know, someone mentions a group or an artist and you don't know them and they're like, oh, how do you not know this artist? You know, what's wrong with you? And I just think there's so many artists and so much stuff. And I hate that conversation where someone sort of makes you feel dumb for not knowing about something. And so I sort of wanted to be that, you know, dumb person, but be very like well-intentioned. I think that's kind of like funny and sort of sweet.
Coca-Cola, you had the lemonade angle for Coca-Cola. Briefly talk about that.
Right.
What would you decide to do with them?
Another thing, just I had a dumb idea that I thought was so dumb. It's like smart. which is, you know, like, hey, I came up with this new soda, which is, you know, just basically lemonade and, you know, seltzer water. And so the idea to, this is my new thing, I'm so excited, I really want to bring you in on it, and you're the best and the biggest, and so I choose you. I'm sure there, you know, is even lemon soda or something like that out there.
Yeah. Now, in the book, some of these companies and some of these people answered you.
Right.
Talk about, you had idea, you approached Taco Bell to have a Taco Bell clown, and they talk about how they responded. Some of these letters you published, the responses from them. So talk about the when you pitched a Taco Bell clown to Taco Bell.
Yeah, just same idea, sort of such a big, prominent company. Obviously, they thought of having a mascot, and I think they even did have, like, the little dog or whatever.
Yeah, Chihuahua.
But I was like, you know, hey, I've thought of a mascot for you. You know, why haven't you thought of this thing? And I just thought a clown was, like, the most obvious, like, bad idea that anyone would think of, and, you know, Ronald McDonald. So, just throwing something very obvious and dumb, but, you know, again, like, trying to be earnest about it. They were cool, though, because they gave me, out of anyone who wrote back, they gave me $5.
They gave you five.
So, yeah. $5. And, yeah, I don't know if I ever spent it, but I have it somewhere.
Yeah.
Symbolic.
Yeah. How did you pick the subjects? In the book here, please let me help. Helpful letters to the world's most wonderful brands. Are these everybody, or did you edit? Are there some that we don't see here?
That's most of them. That's most of them. I there was probably a couple I didn't put in, but most of them. Sometimes, you know, if it wasn't going to be something, you know, that was going to make the cut, I usually didn't finish it when I was writing it. It didn't feel right, so.
I mean, were these all, like, one-offs? Or did you spend time thinking about them, editing them? Or are these pretty much as they came to you?
Yeah, I didn't edit this project that much at all. I had a bunch of friends go through it, but not so much the content, more just, like, you know, grammar and stuff like that. This one I didn't really mess with. But, yeah, mostly one-offs. I mostly wrote each one, you know, in a sitting in a couple hours or less. The ideas for them, just, you know, I didn't, like, sit and try and think of ideas. It's just, you know, kept a journal and, you know, noted stuff along the way and then sat down and tried to write about it.
Dear Tupperware, why'd you pick Tupperware?
I did everything based on the idea. So at first I came up with the idea, you know, oh, there's this idea. And then I'm like, oh, who could I write about that? And so I picked Tupperware because I had this idea for a Tupper pair, which is like, just a Tupperware thing specifically designed for a pair. Which actually the other day someone showed me something that was almost exactly that. So I wonder if somewhere out there someone's stealing my ideas.
I was gonna wonder. Yeah, you can't. What's with the complimentary vampires? You do artwork. Is this your own artwork in the book too? So you end most of these with, P.S. as a sign of good faith, please accept this complimentary vampire.
Right. Yeah. So I draw. I'm not drawing a lot these days, but I have a bit in the past. And basically, the honest truth is, you know, I wrote this manuscript, and then it sort of sat in the drawer for a while, and I started to be like, oh, it's not very good, and I wasn't going to do anything with it, and then I decided that if I did little funny doodles on it, that it would be passable. So basically, it was just a sign of my insecurity with the writing, is to do a bunch of drawings. So that's the honest truth.
I mean, it's really, really funny. Like I said, your sense of humor is kind of sly and subtle. I think that's what makes this book work.
I appreciate it.
Dear Michael Jordan, why'd you pick? He's still big here in Chicago. Why'd you pick Michael?
I don't know. Just says same thing. I just sort of focused in on one character, and had an idea, and that was just sort of like where my head was that day, I guess.
My plan is to film you running at full speed towards the edge of a cliff and capture the moment when you either sail brilliantly through the air or plummet helplessly to the rocks below. Now, some of these people didn't respond, right?
Yeah, totally. And I think one of the themes, I guess, in the book that I was interested in at that time is sort of like, you know, making, like, same with the Beatles, just sort of like putting these certain people and Michael Jordan, you know, up on pedestals, and just sort of like they can do no wrong. They are just like, you know, everything to them, everything goes to them, and just sort of doing that even more as the writer, you know, as the voice in this piece, like doing that to a way too far point, sort of for humor.
What was the most positive response that you got? Did someone actually, besides getting the stuff from Taco Bell, was did anyone really reach out to you? And you know, or
no. No one did. No, I didn't. I would have loved someone in, you know, some HR department somewhere to be like, you know, this is funny, or like, are you crazy? That would be cool.
I didn't add them up. About how many are in the book?
I think there's only like 5 or 6 responses, and I initially I thought, you know, oh, I'm not going to put this out because there's not enough responses. You know, got to work with what you got.
Now, tell the listeners, you created kind of a character for this when you approach these people. So talk about the character as you wrote these letters.
Yeah, I just did it in a voice. So like, you know, someone with a character with a backstory. I didn't really think too much about it. I guess probably in the back of my mind was thinking, oh, it's like a sort of cliche, pathetic character. So, you know, I went with the idea of a guy who's maybe like middle-aged, just got divorced and moved back in with his mom and was unemployed and was sort of a low life, you know, deadbeat dad guy, just sort of like cliche. And, you know, he sort of alludes to these events in his life, here and there, you know, at inappropriate times when he probably shouldn't, you know, be sharing too much information. And that was sort of a funny thing to play around with.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and I want to come back and ask you about the Tom Cruise letter. So you got a little more time for us, Zach?
Yep, definitely.
Okay, so don't go away on Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Yes, sirree, we're on the phone with author and musician Zach Sternwalker from Philadelphia. Thanks for staying up with us. This fantastic book, Please Let Me Help, Helpful Letters to the World's Most Wonderful Brands. One of my favorites, there's so many favorites, is Tom Cruise, where you kind of weave our friend. And he comes up a couple times in the book, Sammy Davis Jr. So talk about what you pitched Tom Cruise. And you did get a response from Creative Artist Agency. But talk about what you pitched Cruise.
So I just, you know, sort of was into this idea, sort of what I was talking about earlier, of like, you know, there's only like one or two actors in the world that play every part, you know, you see once or twice a year, oh my God, they're in another movie, they're not playing, you know, some other character who's now, they're playing a female, they're playing another race, they're playing, you know, and it's just like, oh my God, like spread around the roles. So I said, you know, in this book, the character is sort of obsessed with Sammy Davis Jr. as his favorite musician that, you know, sort of soothes him. So he writes Tom Cruise and says, hey, I want you to play Sammy Davis Jr. And I've written a screenplay. And that's sort of the impetus for that letter.
It's hilarious. I'm looking here. And so Creative Artist Agency send you back a letter, and all in caps is Re Zach Sternwalker, Agency Representation, Working Titles, Little Dancing Panda, Watch Him Sing Softly, The Story of Sammy Davis Sr.'s Son, and Candy Corn right. Cadillac. So they actually, you know, looked at it, right? They didn't just throw it away.
Well, the funny part is, in that letter, they say, you know, legally, we're returning this, you know, this is unsolicited. We're returning it unread. We haven't read it. But then right at the top, they say what it's regarding, and they mention, you know, my working titles of this, you know, fake screenplay. So they've obviously read it to get that far, you know, to extract that information. So that was like a time where, you know, it works great as like the straight man, funny man, you know, back and forth between the company.
Did this, in doing all my research on this, was this a zine edition first? And then my obvious follow-up question, did you write a letter to our friends out at Microcosm?
Yeah, I did it. It was just a self-published thing, and I just got a bunch printed up and took it around to bookstores and sent it out to places for a couple years, and I really didn't have any bites or any sort of, you know, I maybe got like under 50 out there into the world. And then a couple people wrote reviews of them in various places, and then I started to get more of them sold. And then a bunch of years went by, and Joe at Microcosm, Joe Beal has always been like super supportive of the book and stuff that I do. So, I emailed him and said, hey, man, I want to, like, you know, would you be down to put this out as like a sort of like a reissue thing? And they were, and they wanted me to write like an intro to sort of like set the book up. Uh-huh. So, you know, when you opened it up, you sort of understood some context. So I decided to do that intro as sort of a letter to them.
And it can be found at microcosm.pub. Is that, mm-hmm. is that the correct website? Yep. And do you have a website? I mean, for your stuff and your music, how can people find out more about you?
I don't have a website of just me. I mean, mostly these days I'm doing songwriting, so I just sort of put my free time of creativity into that. So, you know, Potential Gospel Bandcamp on Instagram, and I'll get a website someday.
I can't tell you how much I like that California is Burning Up. That's really, really a great song.
I appreciate it.
So really sweet. So thanks, man. Yeah. Thanks for staying up. It's you got to get this book. It's a fun read. It's nine. You know, their authors have been on our show before, and they just, like I said, they're nice little books you can carry around. The artwork and design is just really, really on spot. It's only $9.95 U.S.
Yep.
Please Let Me Help, Helpful Letters to the World's Most Wonderful Brands by Zach Sternwalker. Okay,
yeah.
Zach.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
Okay, good luck, and let's talk again.
All right, great.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Thank you, and thank you for listening to Nocturnal Journal on a special Monday night. Thanks, Cash, for the production. Thanks, Adam Phillips, for helping us out. And we'll see you this Saturday night. So thanks again.